this.
Mama.
My.
Brother.
Brother.
Twam.
You.
Chop.
Also.
May.
My.
Mugani.
Sister.
Vava.
Become.
Charami.
I shall go about.
Ubabhyam.
By both of you.
Loke.
In the world.
Asman.
This.
Avyaktaha.
Without being manifest.
Bhima.
Dangerous.
Sainikaha.
With soldiers. So, translation. The king of the Yamanas continued. Here is my brother Prajvara. I now accept you as my sister. I shall employ both of you as well as my dangerous soldiers to act imperceptibly within this world. You can repeat. The king of the Yamanas continued. Here is my brother Prajvara. I now accept you as my sister. I shall employ both of you as well as my dangerous soldiers to act imperceptibly within this world. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Kalakanya was sent by Narada Muni to Yamuna Raj so that she might become his wife. But instead of accepting her as his wife, Yavanaraj accepted her as his sister. Those who do not follow the Vedic principles are unrestricted as far as sex life is concerned. Consequently, they sometimes do not hesitate to have sex with their sisters. In this age of Kali, there are many instances of such incest. Although Yavanaraj accepted the request of Narada Muni to show respect to him, he was nonetheless thinking of illicit sex. This was due to his being king of the Yavanas and Malechas. The word Prajvara is very significant, for it means the fever sent by Lord Vishnu. Such a fever is always set at 107 degrees, the temperature at which a man dies. Thus, the king of the Malechas and Yavanas requested the daughter of time, Kalakanya, to become his sister. There was no need to ask her to become his wife, for the Yavanas and Malechas do not make distinctions as far as sex life is concerned. Thus, one may outwardly be a sister, mother, or daughter, and still have sex. Yavanaraja's brother was Prajvara, and Kalakanya was invalidity itself, combined and strengthened by the soldiers of Yavanaraj, namely non-hygienic conditions, illicit sex life, and ultimately a high degree of temperature to bring on death. They would be able to smash the materialistic way of life. They're doing a good job of it. In this connection, it is significant that Narada was immune to the attack of jara or invalidity, and similarly, jara or the destructive force cannot attack any follower of Narada Muni or a pure Vaishnava. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 4th canto, 27th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Attack by Chandravega on the City of King Puranjana, the character of Kalakanya. Okay. So, Prajvaro yamma mahabratta tvam cha me bhagane bhava charam ubhavyam lokesmin avyotto bhima sainakaha. So, Om gana timiranda shagaranjana shlakaya chakshurad miritam yena tasmai shigurave namaha. So this Srila Prabhupada's purport actually reminds me of Fiji. So one may say, you know, why does it remind me of Fiji? Well, half of Fiji is people from India, and the other half is, you know, natives, you know, like Polynesian, Melanesian people. And it's very interesting if you look at the birth certificates of both people. Like with the Indians, it actually says who your father is. But with the birth certificates of the Fijians, it doesn't say who your father is. And I have many disciples who were teachers in the school, and they tell me it's illegal to ask a student who your father is. You know, so I asked, you know, why is it illegal to ask who your father is? Because, and they said, well, because they probably don't know. They probably don't know who their father is, and, you know, they're having sex, you know, everybody's having sex with everybody else. And I said, so this is a perfect example of what's going on here. So therefore, should we just say, you know, forget about preaching to such people? There's a very interesting story told in the Puranas about this. Once upon a time, there was a young man, and his name was Jaibali. Have you heard this story before? I don't know. Anyway, and his mother's name was Jabala. Anyway, so once upon a time, very interesting story. So this Jaibali, he wanted to become a Brahmin, and he was, anyway, so he approached his guru. I think it was Gautama Rishi at that time. So he approached Gautama Rishi and he said, Gurudev, I want to become your disciple, I want to become a Brahmin. And so generally in India, you know, when you want to become a disciple of someone, they ask you what your gotra is, right? Prabhupada never asked us what our gotra was. Prabhupada said we were a mixed caste of unknown origin. At least those Westerners. We're not talking about people born in India. You're a mixed caste of unknown origin. Very interesting. Prabhupada said, you know, the Malechas and Yavanas that were actually thrown out of India, they went to Greece and Turkey. Actually, it's quite an interesting name of those two countries, Turkey. Turkey, you know what a turkey is? People eat turkeys. And Greece. Greece is like, ooh, Greece. You ever get grease on your hands? I'm making a play on words. Anyway, Greece and Turkey. So anyway, you understand? Turkey, Greece. All right, got it. So anyway, so this particular individual, he said, Gurudev, I want to become a disciple. And Gautama Rishi said, all right, you know, what's your gotra? And he said, yeah, I don't really know. And what's your father's name? That's how you can tell what your gotra is, you know. What's your father's gotra? So he went to his mother, Jabala. This story is in the Puranas, actually. It's a very interesting story. I think it's even in the original Vedas. No, it's in the Upanishads. It's in the Upanishads. So anyway, so he went to his mother and said, Mom, who's daddy? And she said, I don't know, boy. There have been so many men. And, you know, we don't have genetic testing nowadays. You know, that's something new, isn't it? That they were actually able to, you taste the genes and see, you know, who your father is. Now they have to have been, anyway, we'll get to that in a second. You know, in a Brahminical society or polite society, there's no need of genetic testing because, you know, you knew who your father was. But nowadays, even there was some article recently about some movie actress who died, where did she die? Some South Atlantic, some island or something like that. Does anyone remember the story? Anyway, she had a baby, and she died in the South Atlantic, and then two men were claiming, he's my son. You know, famous movie actress. And they finally had to go for genetic testing to see who was the father. So this is actually quite a common procedure right now. You could actually order it on the internet. I think you scrape when you're inside of your mouth, right? You scrape inside of your mouth, you send it in a little tube in the mail, and they tell you, you know, if your genes are compatible with someone else's genes, if there's a good possibility he's the father. Interesting, isn't it? It's actually quite a common procedure. It's very cheap, too. I think you get it for about $400 nowadays. It used to be very expensive. Anyway, getting back to the point. So his mother said, you know, I don't know, you know. You know, could have been him, could have been him, could have been him, and so he goes back to the guru, and he says to the guru, you probably know this story, it's a famous story, I tell it in South India all the time. So he goes back to the guru, Gautama, and Gautama says, you know, all right, so who's your father? And he says, my mother doesn't know. I don't know. Unknown gotra, you know, Gurudev. And the guru said, you're a Brahmin. Why? Because it was truthful. You know, most people would make up a story, say, you know, hey, you know, I'm Gautama, you know, descendant of Gautama Rishi there, you know, something like that. Because Prabhupada wasn't a good Gotra, he was actually descendant of Gautama Rishi. Anyway, so there is hope. You know, so it's not that we give up preaching to people who come from cultures like that. I mean, if we gave up preaching to people who come from cultures like that, we wouldn't have anyone to preach to in the West, practically speaking. You know, we could just, like, forget about doing the Jazz Fest program. just forget about it. Anyway, so the Western culture, for the most part, and another story is that in Europe especially, it's even worse. Like in Europe, I visit with some of the devotees, and, you know, man and wife, they've been living with each other for many, many years. And I say, you know, hey, don't you think it's time for you to get married? You know, they have a kid and everything like that. Time for you to get married. And they say, marriage? That's just a piece of paper. Of course, people used to talk like that in the 1960s, isn't it? Marriage is just a piece of paper. And they said, plus it takes so much trouble and money and hiring lawyers when you want to break up. Like in America, most places, you got to wait a whole year. A whole year to get divorced. I mean, it's just like, huh, this is not fair. You should be able to get divorced like that, you know. I remember, I should even tell the story about my own family. My mother's divorced, actually, from my father. I know who my father is, though. It's not that bad. And I do know who his name and everything like that. And I didn't have to check it out because I had the same nose as him and everything like that. We just compared noses. Anyway, so when my mother got divorced, they actually had stricter laws in the United States than they do now. That you have to have some, like, really hellish reason for the divorce. Like, you know, the guy had strung you up by the neck and, you know, was trying to kill you or something like that. And, you know, some real... Or you had to have, like, pictures of him with his girlfriend or something like that. I mean, nowadays, you know, there's no-fault divorce, you know, like, no-fault auto insurance. So... It's much easier. You just have to, you know, you have a separation agreement for a year and that's it, and you're finished. So my mother at that time was very, very difficult. So what she did is she flew to Mexico. Mexico? You know Mexico? That's where they're having all that, the viruses, you know, the flu, the swine flu. Anyway, she flew to Mexico. Actually, she flew to the border town and then crossed over to Mexico. I think it was Nogales or something like that. Anyway, she crossed from Texas to Mexico and had like a 5-minute divorce. They stamped her paper and she came back and she was finished. Pretty good. That's a good way for those of you who want to... I'm not suggesting it. Anyway. But it was, you know, it was a quick and easy divorce. Anyway... And in those days, divorce was not so common. You know, it was just like... What?
You need a
passport now to go to Mexico. Previously, you didn't need a passport to go to Mexico. You just need a birth certificate. So in those days, divorce was not common. I mean, it was just very rare. You know, like little Johnny's parents had a divorce. Everyone would say, do you know little Johnny's parents are getting a divorce? Do you know little Johnny's parents are getting a divorce? You know, there'd be a whole... rumor mongering about it. Wow. Can we go and see them? Wow, I've never seen it before. But now it's over 50%, you know, which is really interesting. Not nice, but it's interesting. So it's actually increasing, and it's actually due to, you know, the concentration from, mostly it's due to the understanding that, you know, life is meant to enjoy the senses to the ultimate degree. As like Prabhupada is talking about the sex life here. Of course, the sex life, Prabhupada is very clear that if one has illicit sex life, unlimited sex life, or not unlimited, no one's unlimited, but if one has a lot of sex life, then it actually depletes the bodily energy. In the Ayurvedic system, it's understood. Like Prabhupada would talk about, you know, how a man loses vital fluid, it's like, you know, so many pounds of blood, isn't it? And you know, it depletes the energy. And even in yoga, you understand how, you know, dealing with the chakras, how it really, like, destroys, you know, the energy centers of the body. I mean, just like, huh? I mean, even traditional yoga, we're not talking about modern day yoga, you know, imitate, you know, so they come up with all these different varieties of yoga, had nothing to do with yoga, except for some of the exercises. So that's one side effect. But perhaps even the worst side effect, you know, besides it's killing people, is the, there's another one before I go on to that, is that it creates uncleanliness, as Prabhupada talks about here, like the four principles of religiosity, cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. Each one is destroyed by one particular activity, and illicit sex destroys the cleanliness. And so by destroying cleanliness, you get sick. Like Prabhupada said, the causes of disease, you know, I know you doctors have many causes of disease, but actually Prabhupada said the cause of disease is like anxiety, overeating, or uncleanliness. You know, if you can eliminate those three, you'll be healthier. Of course, you'll still die. You know, you can be a cleanliness fanatic. What is that, Lady Macbeth? You know, out damn spot. You know, like a obsessive compulsive, isn't it? You know, you can be a cleanliness fanatic. You know, some people are. They spend hours just like cleaning their hands every day. But you know, still gonna die. But you're gonna have a longer life. You're gonna have a healthier life. You're gonna have more energy. Your mind is gonna be clearer. I remember my grandfather. I mean, of course, he always was married to my grandmother. That's something unique. Anyway, so he never got divorced. But in the end, he had Parkinson's disease. So, of course, you could say, you know, why did he have Parkinson's disease? You know, there's so many theories about disease. But basically, he was concentrating on illicit sex life the whole time because he, you know, went into his closet after he died and there was a stack of magazines, you know, with you-know-what on them, sort of pictures in them, you know, Playboy or, of course, he's not a boy, you know, Play Granddaddy magazines. Like grandpa, you know. Can you imagine, you know, old man, you know, 60, 70 years old. But Prabhupada said that desire doesn't go away. You know, that was that story Prabhupada told about the sage who went in to see the king's, went in to see a sick man with the king and the king's daughter. You understand? And the sick man who was dying, he didn't even look at the sage or the king. He just looked at the young king's daughter. You know, even though he was dying, leaving his body, practically speaking. So anyway, there is some indication that his concentration on those that illicit life actually depleted his bodily resources like that. And finally he became, you know, invalid with Parkinson's disease. I mean, no, people will still get these diseases even if they don't have illicit sex life. I know that. But at least they're going to be more prone to them. But look at someone like Prabhupada, who is completely, you know, free from this desire, completely dedicated to Krishna. Look how much energy Prabhupada had. When Prabhupada would go for a walk, we couldn't keep up with Prabhupada. I mean, Prabhupada's strength was actually greater than our strength. And Prabhupada slept less than us. He had so much energy, it was incredible. Prabhupada walked straighter than us. You know, I'm even looking at the devotees nowadays. And most of them, you know, their heads like this. You know, that's not actually good for you. You know, the head is actually quite heavy. I don't know if you notice that. And when I'm not saying get rid of it, you know. You know, you want to lose weight, you get rid of your head. I mean, I'm not saying that. But it's heavy, so if you balance it properly on the neck, isn't it, doctor? You're going to have less problems, spinal problems. But most people, most devotees, you know, they're just like, even chanting japa is like, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And you see, as they gradually get older, the neck is bent like that. Just look at it. So, but Prabhupada, you know, I was just looking at the way Prabhupada walked so regally. I mean, you know, Prabhupada was 70 years old. And Prabhupada walked like a young man with so much strength, you know, so much charisma, so much energy. And that was, Prabhupada had that energy. Of course, he's a pure devotee. But Prabhupada said, you know, he was free of sex desire. And that's so he had so much energy like that. Prabhupada actually attributed it to that. So anyway, so overeating, uncleanliness, or anxiety causes disease. Prabhupada said this. It's not my invention. It's not that I read it on the internet, you know, and Veer Krishna Maharaj, you know, is following Lewis Hayes, isn't it? Then, you know, people accuse me like that. Oh, look, he's a new agey. You know, this Prabhupada said that, not me. So if you're anxiety about things, you know, you get so many diseases, and you're, you know, actually it depletes the body, the mechanism, it depletes the body, bodily's immune system. You understand? And so you can get attacked. If you're weak, you can get attacked. The diseases are there, just like it's known in medicine that you have so many microbes and different bacteria in your body, but when you become weak, they actually can take advantage of it. Right? There, you know, a lot of them are in the air, in the body, and so when you're weak, then that's it. So anyway, so all these activities like illicit sex, of course illicit sex means basically like complete uncleanliness. So many diseases come about by that. Just like you have this AIDS. Of course, we're feeling very compassionate upon people who have AIDS. You know, children are born with it from mothers who have AIDS. There's no question about lack of compassion. We're interested in their finding a cure for it. But, you know, people would actually give up illicit sex. I think the disease would more or less come under control, isn't it? Isn't that true? Or am I wrong? I mean, they'd still get some children who have it from the mothers and things like that, but more or less, I mean, is that impossible? I mean, even in India, there's so much AIDS. It's primarily spread. We'll wait till he finishes, you know, this is. All right, it's primarily spread by the truck drivers in India. Did you know that? Because these truck drivers are going all around India and they're having illicit sex, you know. Anyway, they're not great saints driving a truck. It's not like American truck drivers who are great saintly personalities. You know, Brahmins. And we have devotee truck drivers. But Indian truck drivers, I mean, they... No, American truck drivers are pretty bad, too. Like, we had one devotee. Mother Tulsi was working the rest plaza. And she was telling me how that, you know, all the prostitutes, they would hang around the rest plaza for the truck drivers. I don't know if you know this. And so, you know, so AIDS is spreading and other diseases. You know, there's so many other diseases. You know, it's just, you know, people are worried. Like nowadays they have this thing with the flu. People are wearing a mask. But, you know, but illicit sex means to actually exchange your bodily fluids. You know, it's silly. You wear masks, but do something worse as far as the cleanliness is concerned. Anyway, so let's get on to another point. It's a little gross. So another point sociologically. Let's talk about the sociology of the whole thing. That having strong marriages is extremely important in order to have a stable society. Otherwise, you don't have a stable society. The society is just consists of brahmacharis or bachelors. It's not a very stable society. Society, the stomach of society, is the grahasas. That's the varnashram culture. And incidentally, varnashram is present everywhere, although it's not recognized. There's always different classes. Actually, there was varnashram in Europe before. There was the kings. There were the brahmanas or the ministers. There were the different worker classes, the vaishyas. I mean, and it was hereditary in Europe for a long period of time. Anyway, so you always have varnashram, and so the stomach of the different ashramas is the grahastha ashram. Stomach means maintains the rest of society. So you need a stable grahastha ashram. So, And grahastashram means what? Children, right? Just like we have two children here. They came from grahastashram. Actually, three children. Badri's a grown-up now. He's not a child. Grown-up. He's not a child anymore. So anyway, the children of the future of the society. So what happens, I'll tell you what happened to the grahastashram is that, and I'm not talking about devotees particularly, I'm talking about just the marriage situation or the different types of sex life that are going on in society today, is that when you doctors came up with contraceptives, that sort of divested sex life from reproduction. You know, divested the concept of sex from reproduction. Previously, I mean, not everywhere. Obviously, there were exceptions to this. But previously, you know, sex life meant reproduction. I know the Catholic Church had different methods to get around the whole thing, which didn't always work. But, you know, Catholic people generally had pretty big families. And in India, traditionally, they had big families too, isn't it? Also, another thing is, when you live in a farm, having a big family is an asset. Because the children, older children take care of the younger children, they help you farm. I mean, it's really, when it's agriculturally based society. But when you live in the city, having children is more or less an expensive hobby. You understand? You have one or two hobby children. But when you live in a farm, you know, it's just like, hey, you know, the more the merrier. But it's very expensive. I mean, how much does it cost to raise a child in today's society, send him to university and everything like that? How much does it cost? I mean, by the time you're finished, $500,000 or something? With medical care, with everything else, you know, $500,000. It's expensive. So anyway, so society came up, or doctors or whatever, came up with contraceptives. And so once sex life was seen as divested from the reproductive thing, which is actually the natural sex life, you know, people, that's natural. You know, birth control pills, I don't think you have a tree out there, new Taliban with birth control pills on it. You know, birth control tree, you know. You can sell it to the rest of the world. Anyway, so I'm sure they have some herbs that are useful in that respect. But anyway, I mean, as soon as they divested the two, then sex life was just seen as a means of enjoyment in society. So it's just seen like anything else. You know, I'm going bowling, or I'm going for sex life. I mean, it's seen exactly in the same light. Like you like bowling. I like soccer. You know, you like heterosex. I like homosex. You understand? It becomes exactly like in that particular category. I mean, I'll give you an example. That just my own experience yesterday, I was talking about getting a car for my preaching and everything like that. So, you know, I went on the internet to look at all the, you know, just get an idea of what's the best car. Do some research, you know, intelligence. And so every single page, there's an advertisement for this pill called VMAX. Which is, I'm not going to tell you what it does. But anyway, it's every single page. I'm not joking about it. Every single page. All I'm trying to find out is which car has the best EPA, you know, the mileage, and the safest car, you know, the best airbags. I don't care about this other stuff. But every single page. I'm not joking. There wasn't one page that didn't have an advertisement, you know, for Viagra or for VMAX. And I'm just going, huh? And not only advertisement, but, you know, just explicit stuff, you know, ladies going, oh, now you're much more attractive to me, or whatever, you know. And people taking these pills, and they're dying from them anyway. Because it says, you know, in the fine print, don't take it if you have a heart condition. Don't take it if you're over 40. Don't take it if you're over 25. I didn't know it didn't say 25, but and just like, I'll tell you another funny story. I mean, it's funny, but it's horrible. that there was another article I read in the newspaper, it was about a month ago, that there's a big problem in old people's colonies in the United States. You know, old people's colonies? You know, anyway, where old people own homes. What do they call those places? Retirement communities. Retirement communities. Big, big problem. The problem is the police have to raid them, have drug raids all the time there. But they're not smoking marijuana. They're not snorting heroin. They're buying illicit Viagra. Yeah, it's a big problem. Yeah, it's a big problem in those communities. You didn't know that? A big problem. Why is it illegal? Because these poor people, if they take the stuff, they'll probably have a heart attack and die. Can you imagine that? And they think that's a good way to die. Then you become dog in your next life. You understand? You die like that, you become a dog. Or one of the, just like I was out in the farm recently, and I was trying to pick some flowers for my deities, you know, taking my walk, trying to pick some flowers for the deities. And these are really nice flowers growing along the road. And I go to them to pick the flowers, and there's these two bugs stuck to each other in each of the flowers. You know, love bugs? Did you ever see them? There's a season, love bugs, where you can't drive your car without getting the car windshield completely opaque, like that. And they're like glue when they die on the car. So I was just like, huh? You know, just look. I said, I can't even take these flowers. You know, I don't want to disturb the love bugs with their romance. So anyway. So getting back to the point, I mean, so in today's society, I mean, you can't even look at a news page on the internet without seeing an advertisement for these things now. And can you imagine how it affects the young people's minds when they look at the internet? What they're thinking about? Can you imagine, you know, what they think that, you know, the purpose of life is at that particular point? Where practically every page, of course, I guess they pick car things because people who are into cars are more into inclined, you know, like, I guess if I went on the Harley Davidson page, it would be worse. You know, Harley Davidson motorcycles? It'd be worse. But the point is, as soon as you divest, you know, sex life from reproduction, then you get all these aberrations that occur in society. That's the real point. I mean, because it's meant for a certain thing, just like as soon as you divest, eating from giving your body nutrition, then you're going to have so many diseases. Just like Americans, they're overweight. You go overseas, and people are not as big as Americans. I mean, in America, they have to have hospital doors, triple doors, so the people can fit through them. And double wheelchairs, isn't it, Gopinath? You've seen it in the hospital.
Special beds.
Special beds. And they have to have winches for the, because the poor nurses are breaking their backs. Isn't it? The animals? Yeah. I didn't know that one. Thank you for that information. I needed that. I'm going to use that in the future. They have to send that to the zoo where the elephants get scared. Hare Krishna, you know. Thank you for that information. I'll pay you for that later. But, And you know, and poor me who has to sit in an airplane seat next to someone. I mean, I remember when I was coming here, I had to sit to someone who took up a seat and a half. And that means he took up half of my seat. Fortunately, it was a man, not a woman. But anyway, and so I squished like this. But still, you know, he was on my lap in the airplane. You understand? So as soon as you divest, you know, eating actually becomes something you just do for pleasure. It has nothing to do with nutrition. You know, and then you have people. If people thought about nutrition, they would stop eating meat, they would stop eating high fat foods, they would stop doing so many things. So So the point I'm getting to is, if we use the body for those purposes for which the body was designed and intended, we're going to be healthier, whether it's eating or sex life or whatever we're talking about. We're going to be healthier, we're going to spend less money, we're going to live longer, and this prajvara, of course, we ultimately will die, but at least our mind will be able to focus on Krishna at the time of death. So anyway, so these are some of the points we can make about this particular verse and purport. Don't blame me for speaking about these things. That's what the purport is about. People always get disturbed and say, Maharaj, why do you speak about these things in class? That's what the purport is about. You know, the verse and purport about illicit sex. So, and of course, Prabhupada said at the end here, if someone follows Narada Muni, what does it mean to be a follower of Narada Muni? That Narada Muni did not accept Kalakanya. In other words, he did not engage in illicit life, obviously. And therefore, they're not attacked by this jara or invalidity. Of course, I mean, they may become an invalid in the sense that the body may become decrepit, but their mind will be clear. You understand? Just like even we have this case of Jayapataka Maharaj, he had this aneurysm, but his mind was clear the whole time. He remembered everybody who visited him. You know, even when he was in the coma. You know, when I talked to him, I said, "You remember when I visited you, talked to you over the speakerphone?" He said, "Sure," and he remembered every word. He remembered better than me. And I was conscious. I wasn't in a coma. So, I mean, this is the value of, you know, pure life, pure Krishna conscious life. There's a great value to it. Okay, so any questions or comments? Yeah.
I have a young man that used to call me about this when I was in the club. A young engineer. And he was coming to Mangalarti, and he was distributing books, and he was chanting the best he could, and he still had so much trouble with controlling sex life. And what I started to tell him is, you know, get attached to deities. Because I could see that his car was like,
yeah.
What
well, actually, Prabhupada said something. When some devotees wrote that they were having trouble having, you know, controlling their senses, Prabhupada said, play some sports. Because it's excess energy. I mean, there's a thing in the mind and there's this thing in the body, you know, the gross body. So one may have to just work out that particular energy. And also, you know, in India also it's considered, like if you see someone eating a lot of cashews, they're probably not controlling their senses, isn't it? Like if you see a sage like with this much cashews eating them, you say he's not following the principles because he's eating too much protein. So there's a protein component. Like Prabhupada also said, like animal protein too really disturbs the senses. But you know, if someone eats a lot of protein or overeats, you know, vacho vega, manasa krodha vega, jiva vega, udarupashta vega, like that. So, you know, there's different things. And, you know, and I just remember in the temple, when brahmacharis would eat a lot of sugar, they'd become really angry. And I don't know if they became lusty, but they became really angry. They would eat sugar and they'd start yelling. You know, when the blood sugar went down the next day, Monday morning blues. Everyone had the sugar blues. You know, Sunday night they were all ecstatic, you know, dancing in kirtan. Monday morning they were all fighting each other. I don't know if you've ever seen that before. But when people eat a lot of sugar, blood sugar goes up. Of course, ultimately, they may get diabetes, which is even worse. So, that, you know, there's the question of controlling the senses. You know, obviously, if one wants to control their senses, they don't want to eat a lot of sweets or whatever. Not natural night.
Not much natural for devotees, especially.
Yeah.
Householders, especially, you know, if they have
many children,
they can take the agriculture and, you know, live in the country and try to win for self-sufficiency.
But we have to preach too, you know, so I mean, it depends on the individual person. Prabhupada also discouraged people from having too many children. Because, he wanted the devotees to preach. So there's that balance, too. But if someone is not a preacher, what are they doing in the city? That's my question. If someone's not a preacher or a big businessman making millions of dollars and giving it to your neighborhood sannyasi. I don't know what they're doing in the city if they're not a preacher. They should live in the farm. You get simple living, high thinking, Prabhupada says, is our motto.
But don't you think there's inadequate emphasis in this kind of
for Farming, yeah.
Like all devotees don't have to huddle around cities.
I think that, there's an inadequate emphasis, but it's you can't force people to, because people are addicted to an easy life. I mean, I'll give you an example. Like in Nugaloka, last year we were growing tomatoes, really nice Roma. You know what a Roma tomato is? Really nice. And they were growing 50 feet away from my house. So the person cooking for me was told, go pick the tomatoes. They were there already. It's not that she had to, till the soil or anything like that. Go pick the tomatoes and give them to, me. I just eat raw stuff anyway. And so they said, no, it's too much trouble. So instead they got in the car, drove to your family Walmart, superstore, and bought the tomatoes. And I kept watching these tomatoes, and they were rotting in the vines. Finally, I went out, and I got a big bag, and I just, in 10 minutes, I collected all the tomatoes, and I had two giant bags full of tomatoes, and they were delicious, much better than your Walmart superstore tomatoes. So what is this? It's like a laziness, In the modern culture, not everybody, but many people become very, very lazy. Because farming is hard work. I mean, I like looking at Jayanti on the farm who milks the cows every morning. Everybody knows Jayanti? No. Very dedicated devotee. She goes out every morning at 6 o'clock, every evening at 5 or 5:30 or something like that, is milking the cows. I mean, it's hard work. I mean, you ever milk a cow? It's not that you say to the cow, okay, give me some milk, bossy. That's what they used to call cows, bossy. Anyway, or what's the name of Borden's cow? It was the name of the Borden cow. It starts with an E. Anyway, so, no, I mean, you gotta, I milk cows, it's hard work, It builds up the muscles after some time. You ever milk a cow? No. How many people here ever milk a cow? Two people. Amazing. Amazing. And you're all from India. Do you ever milk a cow? No? Do you know what a cow is? That's that animal, with horns on his head. So can you imagine that? I mean, these people are all from rural India or Bangladesh or somewhere like that, and they've never milked a cow. What to speak of us city folks? And the first time I milked a cow was interesting. The person who was supposed to milk didn't show up, so I just went out to milk the cow, and I said, all right, where's the milk to the cow? And the cow looked at me like I was crazy. And so then I put the bucket under and I started to pull. And it's still no milk can, because you just don't pull, You have to create suction with your fingers like that. And then because I was such a neophyte, the cow didn't let her milk down. She just said, not in English. But she said, who the hell are you? So finally, after taking a cloth and talking to her, warm cloth, and rubbing her down for about an hour, she agreed to give milk. But it was difficult. And it took a lot of strength in the arm. So anyway, that's how I learned how to do it, by trial and error, how to milk a cow. So it's hard work. And cows aren't just milk. They have to be taken care of. The pastures have to be taken care of. I mean, it's a difficult thing, isn't it? So it's hard work. Whereas it's much easier to go to the store and just buy a plastic jug of homogenized, pasteurized milk. You don't even have to heat it anymore because it's already pasteurized. And then people in America, they're very accustomed to drinking cold milk, isn't it? There's even one devotee I was talking to. Every morning he has cold milk on his cereal. But said Prabhupada said cold milk creates mucus, so you have to, if you're going to take milk, then it has to be taken warm. But in America, we're actually accustomed to so many things that are backwards. Isn't it cold milk on our Rice Krispies, Snap, Crackle, and Pop? You know what a Rice Krispie is? No one knows what a Rice Krispie is.
Brushing teeth after taking bath.
Yeah, brushing teeth after taking bath. Everything's opposite. Taking a shower before you go to sleep at night, not when you... Isn't it? Not when you wake up in the morning, before you go to sleep, so you don't get the bed dirty. So, anyway. So I think that's the problem with people doing agriculture in America. And even our agriculture, most of the agriculture in America is done by people from Mexico. It's not done by Americans. Most of the agriculture in Europe is done by people from Eastern Europe. Most of the agriculture in Australia is done by non-Australians. So wherever you have a so-called, quote, first world country, developed country, the people are not very much interested in doing these things. I mean, even when they go to your Walmart, when they try to find a parking space, they'll cruise around for half an hour to find a space closer to the door so they don't have to walk an extra 50 feet. You ever see that? They just keep cruising around. I mean, when I go to Walmart, and I do sometimes, I hate to say that, but if I ever go to Walmart, I'll just take the first space available. You know, even if it's another 50 feet, it just takes me 2 minutes to walk 50 feet, or 1 minute or something like that. So, big deal, I get some exercise. But people are not inclined to exercise in America. And even when they do exercise, they have to get a machine at home to help them exercise. They get a fancy treadmill that costs $4,000, where you set the height of the hill, you set all these parameters on it. I stay at friends' houses and they have these treadmills, and you need an engineering degree to operate the treadmill practically, because there's all these different parameters you set on it. Or they have these weightlifting machines, or they have, what else do they have? Stationary bicycles. Right? Or you have a stepper, you know, instead of getting steps, walking up the steps in the office, they take the elevator up and then they get a stepper at home. It's interesting, isn't it? So whatever exercise they get is at home. And then they, just to encourage themselves to exercise, they have to watch a Jane Fonda exercise video while they're exercising. You understand Jane Fonda? No. Unless they have the right music. Even one of my disciples got me these shoes, these electronic shoes, so that I would exercise more. It attaches to an iPod, you know, and tells you, you understand what? And Nikes. And so it says, what type of walking music do you want? Do you want walking music or running music? Like, you're not going to walk or run unless you have this music. So, I mean, America's kind of weird. I mean, all the Western first world, so-called first world countries are kind of weird, isn't it? It's kind of weird, you know, just like people, and the people getting fat, getting all these diseases. America has a very high incidence of so many diseases, isn't it? And what to speak of depression. I mean, the developed countries have a higher incidence of depression than the undeveloped countries. I mean, I think the highest suicide rate is in the Scandinavian countries. And they're very well developed. They have good medical systems and everything like that. So,
actually, why is there so much opposition to devotees who are trying to promote, like, rural communities?
I don't think there's opposition. I think that just people don't want to do it.
Very high levels, there is actually opposition.
High levels?
No,
the GBC is not opposed to it. You're just hearing propaganda. But it said the GBC is not opposed to it, but GBCs aren't doing it either. But, you know, there has to be... actually there is. Shiva Ram Maharaj is doing a lot of agriculture. You know, they're actually having a self-sufficient community there in Hungary. So it's going on. And And we have new Taliban. I'm saying that deliberately like that. Anyway.
But there's so much of vacant land in the Taliban.
So, when I was there, we made a plan how to fill up the land. I told the devotees how to do it, and if they do it, there'll be so much agriculture going on the next 2 or 3 years. I gave them a strategic plan how to do it, how to get new Taliban working, but let's see if they do it. Sometimes politics interferes with plans. What I told them was that they shouldn't sell any land anymore. They should offer any grahasta who wants to come with a contract, a lease, you know, with contractual terms that you have to grow, we're going to give you for $1 a year or something like that, for a 5-year period, this land to use and to homestead, but you have to use oxen to plow the fields and whatever like that. But you're given it. Phew! You know, that solves the economic problem. You're given the land. You don't have to buy the land. You can homestead there. You can build yourself a shack for $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000, whatever, you know. And plus, you're guaranteed the temple is going to buy every single bit of produce that you make. So you have your economic development. Plus, I mean, not only the temple, that organic food can be bought by anybody. There's a big market for it, isn't it? You know, you're guaranteed every single thing you produce that you don't eat and you don't want yourself will be bought at market price by the temple. Free land. Interesting, isn't it? Free land to use to homestead on, as long as you fulfill the terms of this agreement. That's much better than selling, because what happens when you sell land? You lose control of it, you can't tell people. Once a person owns the land, you can't tell them they can't eat meat, you can't tell them they can't have a barbecue, you can't tell them they can't smoke marijuana. You can't put those restrictions are illegal to put on land. But if you're leasing, you can make all sorts of terms. And you're not charging $1 a year. Anyway, what do you think? No, but they have to farm it. The whole thing, that's the stipulation. The land has to be farmed or else you lose your lease.
Right, but then if they're doing it because they have to do it.
That's fine. It's better to do it because they have to rather.
That's their job.
That's their job. No, what do you. It's not they're choosing to do it. They have other things they can choose to do to support themselves. They can go to the city and sell hats in the French Quarter if they like.
That's true.
They're choosing to do it. No, no one has to do anything. They're choosing to do it because they want to make a living, like that. But if you say go have land and do anything you want on it, that's not what we want to do. You want to give an opportunity to people who are inclined in that way, because many people who are inclined in that way don't have money to buy land.
That's true. So if it was
and we'll screen the people. It's not anybody and everybody, but they have to be people who are really into it, isn't
right.
there? Yeah, so that's what we're doing. Here's the land, and you want some oxen to train up? We'll give them to you too.
Wow. Okay. If they're inclined to do it.
Yeah, so here's. Yeah, well, no one is going to do it unless they're not inclined to do it. Because I tell you, people in America, if they're not inclined, they'll stay in the city selling hats in the French Quarter, like the rest of you. You know, I tell you, it's not. Nobody's going to be forced to do that. It has to be in their blood. So just think about that situation. It would be amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
If the farm would actually do what I said, of course they don't have to do it, but it's an opportunity. You offer it.
Yes.
They have so much land. So sell the produce to the temple, and you have a built-in market.
Yes.
Sell the produce in New Orleans. You understand? Organic food. You have to, certain things. You have to grow organically. You have to use the oxen. You have to farm a certain percentage of the land. I haven't figured out all the details yet. Don't you think? You get people. And but you screen, no lazies or crazies, or people like that. I mean, it has to be screened very carefully who you have. But once you have the agreement, you know, it's a legal agreement with the person.
Yes, so that people aren't coming with a cheating mentality. Somehow or other, I'm going to have this land and have my house.
No, then you're going to leave. But if you sell land to people, what they've been doing so far is selling land at a cheap price, then people just use it as a rural subdivision. They just work in the painting business or something like that, isn't it?
No, you don't have them.
Yeah.
Sold the land to some devotee, and
that devotee... Sold to a non-devotee.
Non-devotee.
Yeah, so you lose the land. This way, you're engaging people in Krishna's service, and you don't lose the Krishna's facility. You're engaging devotees. Anyway, if people had intelligence, they'd listen to me. Yeah. The temple don't get any taxes? How's the temple being run now? Donations. I mean, the temple should just be the temple.
It's temple property, you know.
And it remains the temple property. But they're doing something that you would have to pay devotees to do. So the funny thing is, in other words, they're doing it for free, and you would have to pay devotees to do it. You would, and to get devotees to do it when it doesn't belong to them is impossible.
Yeah.
It's like communism. You can't get people to work. But when something belongs to someone, you know, it's their property.
Yeah, their property. The temple can have some little percentage of taxes from
there. Yeah, but the point is, the point... I mean, maybe you can work out something like that, but the point is, the temple is getting the land farmed for free. Otherwise, if they would have to pay, you know what they would have to do? They'd have to import some people from India, force them to work on the land until they get the green card, and then they won't work on the land anymore. And pay their medical while they're working on the land. You understand? You're not going to get, because farming has to be done by grihasthas. Mainly. You know, maybe you can work out a tax situation, but you're getting something done for free, and people will come out, because people will come out from the city to see this community, this farming community. And then amongst the grihasthas who are farmers, they'll develop their own internal economy. The temple won't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
See, it takes a lot of burden off the temple's head. It really does. I mean, really.
Yeah,
it'll grow the community super fast.
Yeah, otherwise,
and you make it a restriction, the people have to be strict devotees too.
Yeah, yes.
You could even make a restriction, they have to come to the temple at least, you know, 2 times a week or 3, you know, these things are all like up in the air. But you can negotiate different things with people. And it would grow the community real fast. You'd have people committed to farming. I mean, like, you take a community like Alachua, hardly anyone is farming. It's the biggest, it's not a farm community, it's a rural subdivision. And even in New Taliban now, who is farming?
Nobody.
You got one lady doing the cow program. One poor little girl, you know, Jayanti.
Yeah.
And you know, the men help with the fencing and everything like that, but she does the cow program. So, I mean, what's the success now? There's no success. And when people own something, they work hard. Just like if you go around here in New Orleans and you look at everybody's front yard, it's beautiful. You look at the temple front yard, it's not so nice. I mean, it's all right. I don't want to criticize. But it's the individual people's front yard is much more beautiful than the temple front yard. I hate to say that. I mean, I take my walks every day. You know, I'm walking around the neighborhood. Beautiful flowers, and I mean, it's amazing. It's like landscape gardens in everyone's house because it's their house. Prabhupada said, proprietorship turns sand to gold, right? When you own something, when you own your car, you take care of it better than the temple car, right? The temple car, you know, who cares if there's oil in it or gasoline or even tires on it? But it's a question of proprietorship. People, I tell you, the people would come to the farm then. Now nobody's got, now everyone's leaving the farm. All the families leaving the farm. You know, children, they don't want to live in the farm, man. Where are all the children now? They're in Vrindavan or in Alachua, right? Alachua, Mayapur, Vrindavan. That's it. The farm will actually become, unless they do something radical, become like Death Valley. You know, become like one of those cities in the Old West where everybody's moved out and there's nobody there anymore. Ghost town. I mean, they get a village industries too. I mean, so many things. Yeah. I mean, that people can make retirement. All these things have to be worked out. But I'm just saying, first of all, the farming has to be there.
Yeah.
If there's no farming, nothing will happen there.
Useless.
The whole thing is useless without farming. It's just a big piece of land. If there's no farming or no cow protection. There is cow protection, but if there's not a lot of people engaged in it. Then everything is going to be based on importing people from India, like Yogendra, and always keeps importing people. Then they get their green card, and they don't want to stay on the farm after they get the green card. Why? All right, we have to end now. Time is time. People on the internet are getting tired. Okay. Okay.